30. Marcy accepted the canteen from Alec. It steamed from the top, although it was only lukewarm to the touch. She sat on the steps up to the temple, swathed in about 40 blankets. She'd surrendered her medallion to one of the Malwish people until more could be secured from the airship. And its recovery was an interesting sight, to say the least. Waxillium stood on the rocky section before the plateau, heaving with two hands and pulling on nothing visible. Up ahead, the rogue airship slowly sank through the snow-filled sky, drawn toward Waxillium on an invisible tether.
"Will it break apart?" Alec asked.
She looked at him with surprise, then down at his language medallion.
"Warm chalk and a blanket will do me for a minute,"
he said, settling down and pulling his blanket around him.
"Others are in greater need, yeah? The ship, will it break?"
Marcy looked up toward it. She could imagine Suit's people aboard, trying desperately to make the engines work harder, the fans blow more powerfully. It sank anyway. Waxillium Ladrian, bearing the bands of mourning and supremely annoyed, was like a force of nature. She smiled and sipped her drink.
"Rusts," she said, looking at it. "What is this?"
It was sweet, thick, warm, chocolatey, and wonderful.
"Chalk," he said. "Sometimes it is a man's only succor in this frozen, lonely world, yeah?"
"You drink chocolate?"
"Sure, don't you?"
She never had. Plus, this was far sweeter than the chocolate she was used to. Not bitter at all. She took a long, soothing draught.
"Alec, this is the most wonderful thing I've ever experienced. And I just held the powers of creation themselves."
He smiled.
"I don't think your ship is in danger," Marcy said. "He's pulling on it evenly and slowly. He's a careful man, Waxillium is."
"Careful? It seems to me he is very proficient at breaking things. That doesn't sound particularly careful, yeah?"
"Well," Marcy said, sipping her drink, "he does it with amazing precision."
Indeed, it wasn't long before the airship settled down onto the rocks, still in one piece. Waxillium held it in place, then raised the bands of mourning in one hand, winds, snows, and even traces of mist swirling around him. The fans slowly powered down. A short time later, soldiers exited with hands up. Wayne and Milan scurried up to them, gathering weapons while Alec's people boarded the ship to secure it and search for anyone lurking inside. Marcy waited through it all, sipping her melted chocolate and thinking. Relure's spike lay safely wrapped in a handkerchief, tucked into her pocket. In her mind's eye, she saw Wayne again as he had been, trudging through the snow, gun to his shoulder, a pattern of frozen blood flaking his skin. Alongside this image was the glee with which Waxillium had launched into the sky to chase down his uncle. There was a darkness to these men that the stories hadn't conveyed. Marcy was glad for it, but she had stepped to that ledge, then turned back. Proud though she was of having fulfilled her mission for the Chondra, she had decided that things would be different for her in the future. She was all right with that. It was what she had chosen.
"Frosts," Alex said after some time. "We'd better go do something, yeah?"
She looked up from her now empty canteen of chocolate to follow Alec's gesture. The Malwish airship crew had returned from their inspection, and the enemy soldiers had been led away to be safely locked in the ship's brig, Marcy believed. Suit was still where Waxillium had put him, tied to the top of the Lord Ruler's spear, feet dangling. He'd been gagged, he'd had his metal mines removed, and Waxillium had used allomancy to leech away his metals. And this still seemed like it might not be cautious enough. He still had his spikes, as they weren't sure how to remove them without killing him. He shouldn't be able to do anything without metals, but she couldn't help being worried. Steris had joined Waxillium on the field, and he'd put his arm around her shoulders. Marcy smiled. Now that was an image she'd never thought she'd find comforting. But they would do well together. Unfortunately, trouble approached Waxillium and Steris in the form of Alec's captain and some of her airmen. The two groups faced one another, Milan and Wayne falling in beside Waxillium, Wayne casually carrying that shotgun, Milan standing a good 2 inches taller than anyone else, arms folded, her posture unyielding.
Right. Let's go, Marcy said to Alec.
Alec's captain, Jordis, wore one of the translation medallions, and she didn't flinch before the gust of wind that accompanied Marcy as she arrived.
We thank you for your help,
Jordis was saying, her voice touched by the same accent Alec had.
But our appreciation does not allow us to ignore thievery. We expect that our property be returned.
I don't see any of your property here, Waxillium replied coldly. I see only an artifact we recovered. Well, that and my airship.
Your?
Jordis sputtered. She stepped forward.
Since crashing in your lands, my crew has been incarcerated, tortured, and murdered. You seem to be itching for a war, Allomancer.
Drat. Marcy had been hoping she'd share Alec's reverence for Waxillium. Indeed, much of the crew seemed nervous about him, but the captain obviously didn't mean to back down.
If there's to be a war, Waxillium said, giving you a powerful weapon does not seem the method to save my people. I cannot help what Suit and his people did to you. They are outlaws, and what they did was deplorable. I will see them brought to justice.
And yet you steal from us.
Do you deny, Waxillium asked, that this temple was empty upon my arrival? Do you deny that this airship was from a nation other than your own? I cannot steal what was not owned, Captain. By right of salvage, I claim this relic and that ship. You may...
Marcy was about to step between them when, curiously, Steris spoke up, interrupting Wax.
Lord Waxillium, she said, I think it prudent to let them take the ship.
What? Like hell I'm going to...
Waxillium, Steris said softly. They're tired, miserable, and a long way from home. How do you suggest otherwise that they are to return to those they love? Is that justice?
His lips tightened.
The set is one of these ships to study, Steris.
Then, Steris said, looking to Jordis, we will beg, in return for the generosity of this gift, that the Malwish people open trade with us. I suspect we can purchase ships from them more quickly than the set can build their own.
Marcy nodded. Not bad, Steris.
If they'll sell, Waxillium said.
I think that they will, Steris said, looking to Jordis, because the good captain will persuade them that access to our allomancers is worth relinquishing a technological monopoly.
That's true,
Marcy said, stepping up to the rest, Alec with her.
We're rare among you, aren't we?
We?
Alec asked as the captain looked to her.
I'm an allomancer too, she said, amused. You didn't see me charging the cube device back in the warehouse?
I was a little distracted,
he said, sounding woozy.
Oh dear, great one.
Marcy sighed, looking to Jordis.
I can promise you nothing,
the captain said to Steris, sounding reluctant.
The Malwish are but one of many. Another nation among us may see you up here as weak and decide to strike.
Then, Steris said, you might want to inform them that the bands of mourning are here, ready to punish those who attack.
Jordis hissed. Marcy couldn't see her features behind the mask, but the hand swipe she made did not look pleased.
Impossible. You give me the lesser prize to distract me from the greater, yeah? We will not give you the sovereign's weapon.
You're not giving it to us, Steris said.
She looked to Milan, who watched with crossed arms.
Alec, your people have stories of creatures like her, do you not?
Tell the others, Marcy said to Alec.
Please.
He removed his medallion and launched into a furious explanation in his language, waving his hands, then gesturing at Milan. She cocked an eyebrow, then made her skin translucent, displaying a skeleton that was so cracked and mangled Marcy was left momentarily stunned. How was Milan still standing? The captain took this in.
We, Steris said, will give the bands to the immortal Chandra. They are wise and impartial, tasked with serving all people. They will promise not to let us use the bands unless we are attacked by your kind."
There was no way to tell what Captain Jordis thought, her expression hidden behind that mask. When she did speak, she made a few curt gestures, but those could be faked far more easily than facial expressions, Marcy figured. What did one make of a society where everyone hid their true feelings behind a mask, only letting out calculated reactions?
"This is an unpleasant accommodation," Jordis said. "It means I will limp back to my people, half my crew dead and my ship exchanged for one decades out of date."
"True,"
Steris continued at Waxillium's side. He merely stood there, with arms folded, looming, as he was so good at doing.
"But, Captain, you will return with something more valuable than an old relic or even your fallen ship. You'll have new trading partners in a land brimming with metalborn. Has it been mentioned that my Lord Waxillium holds an important seat in our government? That he has a dramatic influence over trade, tariffs, and taxation? Those among your people who secure favorable treaties with us could become very rich indeed."
Jordis regarded them, then folded her arms, facing Waxillium directly.
"It is still unpleasant."
Jordis was much shorter, but she managed to loom pretty well herself. In fact, Marcy got the distinct impression that the woman wanted to shout at them, attack in a rage, seek retribution for what had been done to her and hers. Anything but just simply trade. Perhaps some emotions were too strong to be hidden even by a mask. Jordis finally nodded.
"Very well, let it be done. But I will not leave without a draft agreement, a promise of intentions, if nothing else."
Marcy breathed a sigh of relief, shooting Steris a nod of appreciation. Still, she did not miss the stiffness in Jordis's posture as she and Waxillium shook hands. The basin had not made a friend this day. Hopefully, some last-minute scrambling had prevented them from making an enemy.
"I have one further request," Waxillium said to her.
"What?"
Jordis asked, suspicious.
"Nothing terrible or costly," Waxillium said. "Honestly, I'd just like a ride."
The Southerners agreed, fortunately. They didn't particularly want to carry a brig full of enemy soldiers all the way south. Wax had to make it very clear they couldn't keep suit himself, and the captain relented with minimal argument. She seemed to realize that her best chance of seeing justice done to all of those who had brutalized her crew lay in letting Wax do some thorough interrogations. He kept his relationship to the man quiet. As the Malwish crew prepared the ship for travel, Wax stood before the statue of the Lord Ruler with that single spike in his eye. He'd checked the belt, which was aluminum. No kind of charge. If there had ever been two bracers, he had to assume they'd been made into this one spearhead. Marcy passed behind him.
"I'm going to go check our skimmer for supplies we might have left behind."
Wax nodded.
"I held your power," he thought toward the statue. "If only a tiny bit of it. Rusts. I think I understand."
He'd given the bands to Milan, and she had made them vanish into her flesh. He was glad to know that they were effectively out of his reach. Too much power. He raised his finger in farewell to the Lord Ruler, then jogged off after Marcy.
"Ardell and the Senate won't like this deal," Wax noted as he reached her, "particularly the part about us giving away the bands."
"I know,"
Marcy said.
"As long as I can tell him it wasn't my idea."
She glanced at him.
"You don't seem too broken up about losing the bands."
"I'm not," he admitted. "I was worried, honestly. The bands are drained, mostly, but we could probably recharge them by compounding. The power they offer is something..."
"Sublime and devastating at once?" Marcy asked. "Dangerous because of what it could do in the wrong hands, yet somehow more dangerous in your own?"
"Yes."
They shared something in that moment, swept by winds. Something they'd touched, something, hopefully, only they would know. They turned together without a word, seeking the skimmer. Jordis would want to load it on the ship, but first there was a corpse Wax needed to see. He didn't blame Wayne for what he'd done to Telson. Yes, taking her to Ellendale for justice and interrogation would have been better, and yes, he found that he'd rather have pulled the trigger himself. Harmony was right about that. But either way, Telson was dealt with. That meant blood on the snow. No skimmer. More importantly, no body. Marcy froze in place as they drew near, but Wax approached the empty patch of ground. She had slipped away again. He found he was not surprised, though he was impressed. She'd gotten the skimmer aloft and away during the fighting, escaping during the chaos. Wayne should have known she might be able to heal herself, Wax thought, going down on one knee beside the eerie pattern of blood drops that seemed to outline a body.
It's not done, then, Marcy said.
Wax brushed the drops of blood, frozen to the ground. He'd spent the last 18 months trying to save this woman, and when he finally had, she'd killed him. It's not done, he said. But in some ways, that's better.
Because your sister isn't dead?
He turned toward Marcy. It seemed that despite hours in this frozen place, the cold had only just reached inside of him. No, he said, because now I have someone to hunt.
31. Wax, you gotta say this.
Wax tipped his head back, bleary-eyed. These bunks were not particularly pleasant, but at least the airship flew in a calm, smooth manner. That was nice, as the skimmer had always felt, as if it were one gust of wind away from plowing nose-first into a hillside. Wayne hung halfway out of the room's large window.
That window opens? Wax asked, surprised.
Any window opens, Wayne said, if you push hard enough. Look, you gotta see this.
Wax sighed, climbing up and leaning out of the window beside Wayne. Beneath them, Ellendale spread out as a vast sea of lights.
Like rivers of fire, Wayne mumbled. Look how it follows patterns. Rich areas more lit, roads all in lines. Beautiful.
Wax grunted.
That's all you can say, mate.
Wayne, I see this basically every night.
Now, that ain't fair. You should feel guilty.
For being a coin shot?
For cheating at life, Wax.
How about I feel appreciative instead?
Suppose that'll do.
Wax settled down on his bunk, then pulled on his boots, doing the laces. He ached like a man beaten senseless. He wished he could blame the strain of the last few days, but he'd held the bands of mourning and had been healed completely. That meant these aches came merely from sleeping a few hours on this bunk. Rusts. He was getting old. Upon considering that, however, he found that mortality didn't frighten him as it once had. We should get up to the bridge, he suggested, standing. It had been a full day since they'd left the mountains. They'd stopped at a town to telegraph ahead at Wax's insistence, then waited until the next night to fly the rest of the way. He had had no intention of bringing a massive flying warship anywhere near the city without at least giving them warning first. Jordis had been amenable, once he'd promised her supplies for their trip home in repayment. Marcy worried about the captain, he knew, but he had looked into the woman's eyes behind the mask. She was a soldier, a killer, despite her claims of hers being a simple trading vessel. She knew. Wax had held the bands. He could have swept the Malwish away and stolen their ship without a second thought. Instead, he'd given in to Steris's compromise. Strong words notwithstanding, Jordis realized she'd gotten more out of this deal than she had any reason to expect. Wayne joined him outside their room, and they stepped aside as a few wearied airmen passed. He couldn't see their faces, but could read a world of emotions from their hunched backs and subdued speech. They've been broken, Wayne whispered, looking over his shoulder as the airman continued on. Ain't fair what happened to these folks, Wax.
Is life ever fair?
It has been to me,
Wayne said. More than fair, I reckon, considering what I deserve.
Do you want to talk about it? Wax asked.
What?
You used a gun, Wayne.
Bah! That was a shotgun. Barely counts.
Wax rested a hand on his friend's shoulder. Wayne shrugged.
Guess my body figured, what the hell?
I thought it meant you'd forgiven yourself.
Nah, Wayne said. I was just real mad at your sister.
You knew, didn't you? Wax asked, frowning. That she'd heal?
Well, I didn't want to kill someone in cold blood.
That's good, I suppose.
But there weren't no fire around to light her with first.
Wayne, the shorter man sighed.
I saw the metal mines peeking out of her sleeves. Figured if you're going to give yourself one power from a ferrochemist, you'd want to be able to heal. I ain't going to kill your sister, mate. But I didn't mind making her jump a bit, and I needed Milan's spikes.
Wayne's gaze grew distant.
Should have stayed there, I suppose, to stop her from running, you know. But I wasn't of sound mind, so to speak. I thought you were dead, mate. Really thought it. And I kept thinking to myself, would Wax kill her for real? Or would he give her another chance like he gave me? So, I let her be. I stayed my hand because it was the last thing I could do for you. Does that make sense?
Wax squeezed Wayne's shoulder. Thank you. I'm glad you're learning. It felt disingenuous to say that when inside, in truth, he wished Wayne had stripped off her metal mines and left her a frozen corpse. Wayne grinned. Wax nodded in the direction the airmen had gone. I'll meet you up there.
Going to go fetch your woman, Wayne said. She's going to have a hard time adjusting to life back here, away from her native habitat to the frozen, icy, desolate wastes up.
Wayne, Wax interrupted, soft but firm.
Hmm?
Enough.
I was just...
Enough. Wayne stopped with his mouth open, then licked his lips and nodded.
Right then. See you up above in a few, mate.
We'll be right along. Wayne scampered off toward the bridge. Wax trailed through the hallway, heading down several doors to the room Steris and Marisi had been sharing. He raised his hand to knock, but it was cracked, so he peeked in. Steris lay on a bunk, wrapped in a blanket, sleeping softly. There was no sign of Marisi. She'd mentioned wanting to watch the approach to the city from the bridge. He hesitated at the door, watching her sleep. He almost left. She'd been through so much these last few days. She had to be exhausted. Once they reached Ellendale, they'd still have to unload the prisoners and bring the supplies on board. It could be hours before the ship had to leave. She could sleep a little longer, couldn't she? The door creaked as he leaned against it and Steris started awake. Her eyes found him immediately, then she smiled, relaxing, and huddled up against her pillow. She was wearing a travel dress under the blanket. Wax stepped into the room and took a seat on the bank across from Steris. There was so little space in this room that his knees touched her bunk after he sat, and these were the rooms the airman considered large. He leaned forward, taking Steris's hand in his. She squeezed it, eyes closed once more, and they sat there, still. Everyone else could wait a few minutes.
Thank you, Wax said softly.
For what?
She said.
Coming with me.
I didn't do much.
You were extremely helpful at the party, Wax said. And your negotiations with the Malwish. Steris, that was incredible.
Perhaps, she said. But I still feel that I was basically luggage for most of the trip.
He shrugged.
Steris, I think we're all like that. Shuffled from place to place by duty, or society, or God himself. It seems like we're just along for the ride, even in our own lives. But once in a while, we do face a choice, a real one. We may not be able to choose what happens to us, or where we'll stop, but we point ourselves in a direction.
He squeezed her hand.
You pointed yourself toward me.
she said, smiling. Being near you is generally the safest place.
He cupped her face with his hand, all calloused and rough.
Another adventure.
Eventually, an airman came looking for them, and Wax reluctantly stood, helping Steris up. Then they walked, arm in arm, through the hallways of the ship and up to the bridge where the others waited. Here, Wax was able to appreciate what Wayne had seen. With the panoramic view from the bridge, the city really was gorgeous at night.
Is this a sight that will become commonplace? Wax thought as Steris squeezed his arm, grinning at the sight.
This airship technology was new, but not many years had passed since he'd seen his first motor car on the road. Marcy had been directing Captain Jordis through the city. Wax couldn't read anything in the captain's posture or those of her crew. Were they impressed by the size of the city and the height of the skyscrapers? Or were these things commonplace in the south? They approached Alstrom Tower, and Wax could only imagine the stories this would prompt in the broadsheets the next morning. Good. He hated subterfuge. Let the people of Ellendale know to a man that the world had just become a much larger place. Alstrom Tower, in which Wax had an ownership interest, had a flat top. The captain had assured him that she could land her ship on a nail, so long as the head is smooth enough. True to her word, they set it down.
You're certain you don't want to stay? Marcy asked Jordis. Visit our city? Find out what we're actually like?
No, thank you.
The words sounded forced to Wax. But who was to say, with the accent muddying things?
We will take your offer of supplies and be away tonight.
Time to debark. Together, the others filing after, Wax and Steris made their way through the halls again.
It almost feels, Steris said softly, like this entire experience was a dream. I need to write it all down quickly, lest it fade.
Wax found himself nodding as he thought of his meeting with Harmony. The hallway led to a junction where the wall had opened and a long docking bridge had been settled in place, leading down to the rooftop. Below, Wax picked out several figures craning their necks to look at the ship. Governor Aradel had come in person. Alex stood at the door, and he lifted his mask as Wax approached. No bow or nod, just the mask lift. Among this people, perhaps that was the same thing, as behind him the other airmen did the same.
Mighty one,
Alex said to Wax,
may your next fire be known to you.
And you, Alec.
Oh, it is, he said with a grin. For my next fire is home, yeah?
He looked to Marcy, and then reached up and removed his mask, the broken one, which he had glued. He held it out with two hands, which caused a few gasps behind him.
Please,
Alec said. The word had more accent to it than the way he'd been speaking before. The captain, who had not lifted her mask to Wax, grew stiff at the gesture. Marcy hesitated, then accepted the mask.
Thank you.
Thank you, Miss Marcy, Alex said. For life.
He took a flat, unornamented mask from his waist and pulled it on by the leather strap. It was really nothing more than a curved piece of wood with holes for the eyes.
I look forward to my homecoming, but my next fire after that may be here again. I plan to take you up on your offer to visit this city.
So long as you bring some more chalk, Marcy said, you can visit any time you like.
Wax smiled, and then the five of them relinquished their weight medallion metal mines to the captain, a formality they'd been instructed was customary. Jordis had already presented Wax with one of each, translation and heat storing, as a gift for him to keep. Wayne had likely stolen another set, though Wax intended to wait until they were off the ship to ask. Wax led them down the gangway, Steris on his arm.
Seriously, Waxillium, Marcy said, walking up beside him. You need to import that chocolate of theirs. I don't know what they put in it, but it's amazing. You think the airships are going to be big? Wait until you taste this stuff.
Hey,
Wayne said, pulling up on his other side, but then twisting his neck to look at the people in the ship behind them.
Marcy, I think that pilot fellow fancies you.
Thank you, Marcy said, for lending us your brilliant powers of observation, Wayne.
That could be useful politically, Steris noted.
Please, Marcy said. He's practically a child compared to me. And don't you snicker.
I wouldn't dare, Wax said, eyes ahead. He didn't miss how reverently Marcy carried the mask, however. Ahead, a group of the governor's aides and guards clustered together in a protective bubble, as if they could stave off the weirdness before them, and what it represented, through collective body heat. Aradel himself stood apart, as if he'd pushed out of the group. Wax strolled up to him, Steris on his arm, and waited.
Damn, Aradel finally said. I did warn you, Wax replied.
Aradel shook his head in awe, eyes wide.
Well, maybe this will distract everyone from the disaster you all started in New Saren.
Bad?
Steris asked. Aradel grunted.
Senate's had my balls over the fire for 2 days straight, screaming about war and irresponsible leadership. As if I ever had any influence over you people.
He started, finally ripping his gaze from the airship, and coughed, as if realizing what he'd just said and whom he'd said it to. Wax smiled. Aradel was blunt, but usually displayed more tact than this. You couldn't go far as a constable without some understanding of how to deal with people's egos.
Apologies, Lady Harms, he said. Ladrin, I need to hear what happened in New Saren. The honest truth of it, from your own mouth.
You'll have it, Wax promised. Tomorrow.
But,
Governor, Wax said, I appreciate your position, but you have no idea what we've been through these last few days. My people need rest. Tomorrow, please.
Aradel grunted.
Fine.
Did you prepare the thing I requested? Wax asked.
It's below, Aradel said, turning back toward the airship. In the penthouse.
The governor took a deep breath, looking at that enormous airship again.
Constable General Reddy had led a group of constables up to accept the transfer of prisoners.
Wax could now see that the ship had landed only half on the building. One fan spun lazily, keeping the ship in place.
Likely done that way on purpose, he thought of the landing, as a message. The crew wants to remind us that while we might get this technology soon, we'll still be many years behind them in its use.
I think we'll be fine, Wax said to Aradel. If the outer cities had thoughts about attacking us, I suspect this might stall them.
Spread the knowledge that an airship flew through central Ellendale and let me off, then left peaceably.
We have initial treaties in place, Your Honor, Steris added. Favorable to us for trade. That should give the Hawks pause, and could buy us time to smooth things over.
Yes, perhaps, Aradel said. It's going to be a tough medal for the Senate to swallow, though, Ladrian. Not the airship itself, but the fact that I'm apparently just going to let it fly off.
He hesitated.
I haven't told them what you said about the other item.
Bands of mourning, Wax said.
Aradel nodded, too politic to say what Wax was certain he was thinking.
What have you gone and done to me this time, Ladrian?
Milan, Wax asked, would you mind taking over here?
Sure,
she said, striding toward them. She wore an outfit borrowed from the Southlanders, a man's breeches and boots that went up to mid-calf. She rested an arm on the governor's shoulder.
Holy one,
Aradel said, his voice strained but reverent. He eyed Wax.
You realize precisely how unfair it is to deal with you when you can fall back on heavenly messengers to talk you out of trouble?
That's nothing, Wax said, guiding Steris toward the steps down. Ask me sometime about the conversation I had with God the last time I died.
That was vicious, Steris said as they reached the steps.
Nonsense, Wax said. He's a politician now. He needs to practice being thrown off balance in conversations. Helps him prepare for debates and such.
She eyed him.
I'll be better, he promised, holding the door open for her. Marcy moved to join them, but Wayne caught her by the arm and shook his head.
Better? Steris asked from the stairwell. So this means no more complaining about parties?
Of course I'll gripe, Wax said, following her into the stairwell, leaving the others behind. It's a defining character feature. But I'll try and confine the worst of it to you and Wayne.
And I, Steris said, shall promise to be properly amazed by your exploits saving everyone from everything.
She smiled at him.
And to always carry a few vials of metal with me, just in case. By the way, where are we going?
He grinned, guiding her down to the top floor of the skyscraper, a regal penthouse that, currently, was unoccupied, the tenants having moved to Elmsdale for an extended holiday. Seated in a chair in the hall outside the apartment proper was a tired-looking man in the garb of a survivorist priest. His formal mist cloak, really more of a shawl, worn over robes adorned with stitching up the sleeves representing scars. Steris looked to Wax, curious.
I was wondering, Steris, Wax said, if you'd be willing to be my bride.
I've already agreed.
Yes, but last time I asked with an expectation of a contract, Wax said. It was the lord of a house asking a woman of means for a union. Well, that request stands, and thank you. But I'm asking again. It's important to me. Will you be my bride? I want to be married to you, right now, before the survivor and that priest. Not because words on a paper say we have to, but because we want to.
He took her by the hand and spoke more softly.
I'm painfully tired of being alone, Steris. It's time I admitted that. And you, well, you're incredible. You truly are.
Steris started sniffling. She pulled her hand free of his and wiped her eyes.
Is that good crying or bad?
Wax asked. All these years dealing with women, and he still couldn't tell the difference sometimes.
Well, this wasn't on any of my lists, you see.
Ah,
he felt his heart lurch.
And,
she continued,
I can't remember a time when I missed something for one of my lists, only to have it be so wonderful.
She nodded, red-nosed and sniffly.
And it is. Thank you, Lord Waxillium.
She paused.
But tonight? So soon? Don't the others deserve to attend a wedding?
They did attend one, Wax said. It's not our fault there wasn't a marriage at the end. So, what do you think? I mean, if you're tired from the trip, don't let me pressure you. I just thought...
In response, she kissed him. Epilogue. Marcy found it invigorating to work by candlelight. Perhaps it was the primordial danger of it. Electric lights felt safe, contained, harnessed. But an open flame, well, that was something raw, alive. A little spark of fury which, if released, could destroy her and everything she worked on. She worked with a lot of such sparks these days. Spread on her desk in the Octant Constabulary headquarters were notes, files, interviews. She'd been present for most of them over the last 2 weeks, advising Constable General Reddy. The two of them worked so closely these days, it was sometimes hard to remember how difficult he'd been to her during her early days in the constabulary. Though Suit himself hadn't broken, many of his men had talked. They knew just enough to be infuriating. They'd been recruited from among the dissident young men of the outer cities, their ears stuffed with stories of the survivor and his fight against imperial rule. They'd been trained in cities like Rashikin and Bilming, far from central rule, in closed compounds that were much more extensive than anyone had known. Aradel and the others had focused on these details. Troops, timetables, technology, like the long-distance speaking device Waxillium had stolen from Lady Calasina's mansion. They geared up for war,
all the while talking peace. They were scared, and legitimately so. Decades of not-so-benign neglect had created this snarl. Hopefully it could still be peacefully untangled. Maracy left that to politicians. She cut through the jingoism, the rhetoric, and turned her attention to something else. Stories among the men of something unusual, beyond the rumors of airships and new allomantic metals. She held up one sheet covered in notes. Half-mentions, admissions made with sideways glances, always spoken of in whispers. Tales of men with red eyes who visited in the night. She added the stories to her files of research about Trell, the ancient god that people were somehow worshipping again. A god that had crafted spikes to corrupt the Chandra Pa'om, and whose name was on the lips of many of the prisoners. She'd spent months researching, and so far felt like she knew nothing. But she would find answers, one way or another. Suit's captors thought to shock him with the austerity of his quarters. A common cell in the prisoner's nethers with a bucket for facilities and one blanket on the bed. A tired, pointless tactic, as if he'd known only rose petals and feather beds in his life, as if he'd never slept on a stone slab. Well, they would see. Anything could be an advantage. In this case, it was a chance to prove himself. He would not break, and they would see. So it was that he wasn't at all surprised when, after 2 weeks of captivity, the door to the corridor outside his cell clicked open one night, and a stranger stalked in. Male, this time, with a ragged beard and wild hair. A beggar stolen off the street, Suit guessed. You could tell them by the way they walked. Never a stroll, never leisurely. Always fast, determined, purposeful. Of course, the softly glowing red eyes were another sign. So far as Suit had been able to determine, Waxillium and his fools had no knowledge of these creatures. They didn't understand, couldn't understand. The set had faceless immortals of its own. Suit stood, pulling down the sleeves of his prisoner's jumpsuit and swiping the wrinkles from his shoulders.
2 weeks is longer than I expected.
Our timeline is not yours.
I was not complaining, Suit said, merely observing. I am perfectly willing to wait upon Trell's pleasure.
Are you? The immortal asked. It is our understanding that you push for an acceleration.
I was merely stating my perspective, Suit said, so that a proper discourse can be engaged.
The creature studied him through the bars.
You didn't break or spill secrets.
I did not.
We are impressed.
Thank you.
Advantage. Even 2 weeks in prison can be used to prove a point.
The timetable will be accelerated, as you have requested, the immortal said.
Excellent.
The creature reached into its pocket and removed a device like a small package wrapped in wires, one of Eirich's early attempts at creating an explosive device from the metal that powered the airships. It had proven ineffective, barely more explosive than dynamite, when they needed something that could end cities.
What is that? Suit asked, growing nervous.
Our accelerated pace will no longer require the set to have its full hierarchy.
But you need us, Suit said, to rule, to manage civilization on...
No longer. Recent advances have made civilization here too dangerous. Allowing it to continue risks further advances we cannot control. And so we have decided to remove life on this sphere instead. Thank you for your service. It has been accepted. You will be allowed to serve in another realm.
But...
The creature engaged the explosive device, blowing itself and Suit to oblivion. Wax started awake. Had there been an explosion? He looked around the quiet bedroom suite of the tower penthouse. Steris curled up on the bed next to him, perfectly still in her sleep, though she held lightly to his arm. She often did that, as if afraid to let go and risk all this ending. Looking at her there in the starlight, he was shocked by the deep affection he felt for her. His surprise didn't concern him. He could remember many a morning waking next to Lessie, feeling that same surprise. Amazement at his good fortune, astonishment at the depth of his own emotion. He gently lifted her hand away, then pulled the sheet up around her before slipping from the bed and strolling bare-chested across the room toward the balcony. They'd stayed here in the penthouse through the honeymoon rather than returning to the mansion. It felt like a good way to have a new beginning, and Wax was starting to think he might like to relocate here more permanently. He was a new person for what seemed like the 100th time in his life, and this was a new age. This was no longer an era of quiet mansions and smoking room conversations. It was an era of bold skyscrapers and vibrant downtown politics. The mists were out, curling around outside, though the skyscraper was tall enough he thought he could see stars and the red rip through that mist. He moved to push open the doors and step out onto the balcony, but paused, noticing his dressing table, upon which Druten had set out a row of objects. The valet had gone through Wax's things, from his pockets and from his possessions recovered from the hotel in Nusseren. Druten probably wanted to know what should be kept and which disposed of. Wax smiled, brushing his fingers over the wrinkled cravat he'd worn to the party with Steris. He remembered tossing it to the ground as he changed to trousers and mist coat in his room prior to their quick escape from the city. Druten had laid it out, along with a napkin from the party, monogrammed, and even a bottle cap he'd swiped in case he needed something to push on. But Druten had set it out on its own little cloth as if it might be the most important thing in the world. Wax shook his head, resting a hand on the door out to the balcony. Then he froze and looked back at the table. It was right there, the coin he'd been given by the beggar, shining in the faint starlight. Druten must have found it in his pocket. Wax reached out, hesitated a moment, and then slipped it from the table before stepping out into the mist. "Could it be?" he wondered, holding up the coin. Two different metals. One was silvery. Could that be nigrosil? The other was copper, a ferrochemical metal. Though the pattern printed on the face wasn't the same and the coin itself was smaller, this didn't look all that different from one of the southerner medallions. As soon as he thought of it, as soon as he knew what it might do, the metal mind started working, and he found a store within him, a reserve he could tap. Wax gasped. They called them copper mines, a very special kind of ferrochemical storage. One that stored memories. He tapped it. Immediately, Wax was in a different place. A barren land, with no one in sight and only dust blowing around him. It was a difficult perspective to experience, for only half of the viewer's eyesight was normal. The other was all in blue. Lines everywhere. The vision of a man spiked through the eye. The figure crossed those desolate reaches, passing half-tended crops left to die and rattle in the wind. Ahead lay a town, or the remnants of one. He heard his own boots on the dirty rock, the wind blowing, and felt cold. He continued on into the town, passing foundations marked by old, burned-out fires. Somehow he knew that the inhabitants here, as in other villages and towns he'd passed, had torn down their own walls for firewood in desperation to survive. Bodies lay in the street, stripped. Their clothing had been taken for burning after they'd frozen in what most men would consider only mildly cold weather. Ahead stood a bunker-like stone dwelling. Long and narrow, it reminded him of something. Not something Wax knew, but a memory in the mind of the man storing this experience. A memory of something long ago that flickered in his consciousness, then was lost in a moment. The traveler continued, stepping up to the doorway, which was open. They'd burned the door. Inside, a mass of people huddled together for warmth, wrapped uselessly in blankets. no fires left. They'd burned even their masks. The traveler moved among them, drawing some concern, though most people stared with dull eyes, awaiting death. He found the leaders near the center, the elders, aged and wearing cloth masks on their faces, the only things they had left. One ancient woman looked up at him and lifted her mask. He saw her normally in one world, and outlined in blue in another. The traveler reached out and took the woman by the shoulder, kneeled down, and whispered a single word. Wax came out of that memory with a shock, dropping the coin, startled and stepping back. The coin plinged against the balcony and settled to a stop near his feet. That arm. That arm. Lined with a network of scars layered atop one another, as if made by scraping the skin time and time again. The haunting word he'd spoken echoed in Wax's mind. Survive. Postscript. Maracy, Wax, and Wayne will return in The Lost Metal, the epic finale of Mistborn, Era 2. I plan to release this after Oathbringer, the third volume of the Stormlight Archive, which I'm hard at work writing at this moment. To tide you over until Oathbringer, I have just released a special digital-only novella that is intended to be read after The Bands of Mourning, though it takes place during the events of the original Mistborn trilogy. 10 years in the making, Mistborn Secret History might answer a few of your questions. There's always another secret. Brandon Sanderson, January 2016. Ars Arcanum. Metal's Quick Reference Chart. Metal, iron. Allomantic power, pulls on nearby sources of metal. Ferrochemical power, stores physical weight. Steel, allomantic power, pushes on nearby sources of metal. Ferrochemical power, stores physical speed. Tin, allomantic power, increases senses. Ferrochemical power stores senses. Pewter, allomantic power increases physical abilities. Ferrochemical power stores physical strength. Zinc, allomantic power riots, inflames emotions. Ferrochemical power stores mental speed. Brass, allomantic power soothes, dampens emotions. Ferrochemical power stores warmth. Copper. Allomantic power hides allomantic pulses. Ferrochemical power stores memories. Bronze. Allomantic power allows one to hear allomantic pulses. Ferrochemical power stores wakefulness. Cadmium. Allomantic power slows down time. Ferrochemical power stores breath. Bend alloy. Allomantic power speeds up time. Ferrochemical power stores energy. Gold. Allomantic power reveals your past self. Ferrochemical power stores health. Electrum. Allomantic power reveals your own future. Ferrochemical power stores determination. Chromium. Allomantic power wipes allomantic reserves of target. Ferrochemical power stores fortune. Nicrosil. Allomantic power enhances allomantic burn of target. Ferrochemical power stores investiture. Aluminum. Allomantic power wipes internal allomantic reserves. Ferrochemical power stores identity. Duralumin. Allomantic power enhances the next metal burned. Ferrochemical power stores connection. Aluminum. A Mistborn who burns aluminum instantly metabolizes all of his or her metals without giving any other effect, wiping all allomantic reserves. Mistings who can burn aluminum are called aluminum gnats, due to the ineffectiveness of this ability by itself. True self fairings can store their spiritual sense of identity in an aluminum metal mind. This is an art rarely spoken of outside of terrace communities, and even among them it is not yet well understood. Aluminum itself and a few of its alloys are elementically inert. They cannot be pushed or pulled, and can be used to shield an individual from emotional allomancy. Bend alloy. Slider mistings burn bend alloy to compress time in a bubble around themselves, making it pass more quickly within the bubble. This causes events outside the bubble to move at a glacial pace from the point of view of the slider. Subsumer fairings can store nutrition and calories in a bend alloy metal mind. They can eat large amounts of food during active storage without feeling full or gaining weight, and then can go without the need to eat while tapping the metal mind. A separate bend alloy metal mind can be used to similarly regulate fluids intake. Brass. Soother mistings burn brass to soothe, dampen, the emotions of nearby individuals. This can be directed at a single individual or directed across a general area, and the soother can focus on specific emotions. Fire soul fairings can store warmth in a brass metal mind, cooling themselves off while actively storing. They can tap the metal mind at a later time to warm themselves. Bronze. Seeker mistings burn bronze to hear pulses given off by other allomancers who are burning metals. Different metals produce different pulses. Sentry fairings can store wakefulness in a bronze metal mind, making themselves drowsy while actively storing. They can tap the metal mind at a later time to reduce drowsiness or to heighten their awareness. Cadmium. Pulsar mistings burn cadmium to stretch time in a bubble around themselves, making it pass more slowly inside the bubble. This causes events outside the bubble to move at blurring speed from the point of view of the pulsar. Gasper fairings can store breath inside a cadmium metal mind. During active storage, they must hyperventilate in order for their bodies to get enough air. The breath can be retrieved at a later time, eliminating or reducing the need to breathe using the lungs while tapping the metal mind. They can also highly oxygenate their blood. Chromium. Leecher mistings who burn chromium while touching another allomancer will wipe that allomancer's metal reserves. Spinner fairings can store fortune in a chromium metal mind, making themselves unlucky during active storage, and can tap it at a later time to increase their luck. Copper. Copper cloud mistings, aka smokers, burn copper to create an invisible cloud around themselves which hides nearby allomancers from being detected by a seeker, and which shields the smoker from the effects of emotional allomancy. Archivist fairings can store memories in a copper metal mind, copper mind. The memory is gone from their head while in storage and can be retrieved with perfect recall at a later time. Duralumin. A mistborn who burns duralumin instantly burns away any other metals being burned at the time, releasing an enormous burst of those metals' power. Mistings who can burn duralumin are called duralumin gnats, due to the ineffectiveness of this ability by itself. Connector fairings can store spiritual connection in a duralumin metal mind, reducing other people's awareness and friendship with them during active storage, and can tap it at a later time in order to speedily form trust relationships with others. Electrum. Oracle mistings burn electrum to see a vision of possible paths their future could take. This is usually limited to a few seconds. Pinnacle fairings can store determination in an electrum metal mind, entering a depressed state during active storage, and can tap it at a later time to enter a manic phase. Gold. Augur mistings burn gold to see a vision of a past self or how they would have turned out having made different choices in the past. Bloodmaker fairings can store health in a gold metal mind, reducing their health while actively storing, and can tap it at a later time in order to heal quickly or to heal beyond the body's usual abilities. Iron. Lurcher mistings who burn iron can pull on nearby sources of metal. pulls must be directly toward the lurcher's center of gravity. Skimmer fairings can store physical weight in an iron metal mine, reducing their effective weight while actively storing, and can tap it at a later time to increase their effective weight. Nicrosil. Microburst mistings who burn Nicrosil while touching another Allomancer will instantly burn away any metals being burned by that Allomancer, releasing an enormous, and perhaps unexpected, burst of those metals' power within that Allomancer. Soulbearer fairings can store investiture in a Nicrosil metal mind. This is a power that very few know anything about. Indeed, I'm certain the people of Terris don't truly know what they are doing when they use these powers. Pewter. Pewter arm mistings, a.k.a. thugs, burn pewter to increase their physical strength, speed, and durability, also enhancing their body's ability to heal. Brute fairings can store physical strength in a pewter metal mind, reducing their strength while actively storing, and can tap it at a later time to increase their strength. Steel. Coinshot mistings who burn steel can push on nearby sources of metal. Pushes must be directly away from the coinshot's center of gravity. Steel runner fairings can store physical speed in a steel metal mind, slowing them while actively storing, and can tap it at a later time to increase their speed. Tin. Tin eye mistings who burn tin increase the sensitivity of their five senses. All are increased at the same time. Wind whisperer fairings can store the sensitivity of one of the five senses into a tin metal mind. A different tin metal mind must be used for each sense. While storing, their sensitivity in that sense is reduced, and when the metal mind is tapped, that sense is enhanced. Zinc. Rioter mistings burn zinc to riot, inflame, the emotions of nearby individuals. This can be directed at a single individual or directed across a general area, and the rioter can focus on specific emotions. Sparker fairings can store mental speed in a zinc metal mind, dulling their ability to think and reason while actively storing, and can tap it at a later time to think and reason more quickly. On the Three Metallic Arts. On Skadrill, there are three prime manifestations of investiture. Locally, these are spoken of as the Metallic Arts, though there are other names for them. Allomancy is the most common of the three. It is end-positive, according to my terminology, meaning that the practitioner draws in power from an external source. The body then filters it into various forms. The actual outlet of the power is not chosen by the practitioner, but instead is hard written into their spirit web. The key to drawing this power comes in the form of various types of metals, with specific compositions being required. Though the metal is consumed in the process, the power itself doesn't actually come from the metal. The metal is a catalyst, you might say, that begins an investiture and keeps it running. In truth, this isn't much different from the form-based investiture one finds on Cell, where a specific shape is the key. Here, however, the interactions are more limited. Still, one cannot deny the raw power of Allomancy. It is instinctive and intuitive for the practitioner, as opposed to requiring a great deal of study and exactness, as one finds in the form-based investitures of Cell. Allomancy is brutal, raw, and powerful. There are 16 base metals that work, though two others, named the God metals, locally, can be used in alloy to craft an entirely different set of 16 each. As these God metals are no longer commonly available, however, the other metals are not in wide use. Ferrochemy is still widely known and used at this point on Skadrill. Indeed, you might say that it is more present today than it has been in many eras past, when it was confined to distant Terris or hidden from sight by the Keepers. Ferrochemy is an end-neutral art, meaning that power is neither gained nor lost. The art also requires metal as a focus, but instead of being consumed, the metal acts as a medium by which abilities within the practitioner are shuttled through time. Invest that metal on one day, withdraw the power on another day. It is a well-rounded art, with some feelers in the physical, some in the cognitive, and even some in the spiritual. The last powers are under heavy experimentation by the terrorist community, and aren't spoken of to outsiders. It should be noted that the interbreeding of the ferrochemists with the general population has diluted the power in some ways. It is now common for people to be born with access to only one of the 16 ferrochemical abilities. It is hypothesized that if one could make metal mines out of alloys with the god metals, other abilities could be discovered. Hemallergy is widely unknown in the modern world of Skadrial. Its secrets were kept close by those who survived their world's rebirth, and the only known practitioners of it are now the Chondra, who, for the most part, serve Harmony. Hemallergy is an end-negative art. Some power is lost in the practice of it. Though many throughout history have maligned it as an evil art, none of the investitures are actually evil. At its core, hemallergy deals with removing abilities or attributes from one person and bestowing them on another. It is primarily concerned with things of the spiritual realm and is of the greatest interest to me. If one of these three arts is of great import to the Cosmere, it is this one. I think there are many possibilities for its use. Combinations. It is possible on Skadrial to be born with ability to access both Allomancy and Ferrochemy. This has been of specific interest to me lately, as the mixing of different types of investiture has curious effects. One needs look only at what has happened on Roshar to find this manifested. Two powers, combined, often have an almost chemical reaction. Instead of getting out exactly what you put in, you get something new. On Skadrial, someone with one allomantic power and one ferrochemical power is called twin-born. The effects here are more subtle than they are when mixing surges on Roshar. But I am convinced that each unique combination also creates something distinctive. Not just two powers, you could say, but two powers and an effect. This demands further study. We hope you've enjoyed The Bands of Mourning, a Macmillan audio production for Tor Books. Text copyright 2016 by Dragonsteel Entertainment, LLC. Production copyright 2016 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.